Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. How you doing? Did you have a good weekend? Thanks for dropping by. Stick around for a while. We're going to have just overwhelming amounts of fun or frivolity tonight. No, you know that's not true. Hey, what's up with Joe Lieberman? He's like McCain's shadow. I keep waiting for McCain to sit down on a stage somewhere and take a bar of soap and soap up his feet and try to attach Lieberman to the... Wait a minute. No, that's Peter Pan. Yeah, that was Peter Pan. I wonder, if when McCain pees, does Lieberman go into the urinal with him and stand there and help him zip up his pants? I can't believe this. Every time you see McCain being introduced somewhere, there's Holy Joe. This guy is like a spook, a shade, some kind of a apparition. Ah! Just occurred to me today that just bugged me. A letter from Ed in Miami about last Friday show. I think it was last Friday. Mike, you had a brief comment about Bush, Chavez, and increased oil production. Ed writes, yes, it's probably true that Bush had his hands all over the April 11th failed coup attempt in Venezuela. He's referring to last year, of course. I am a U.S.-born citizen, a resident since 1987. I spent my childhood in Venezuela and was raised under a privileged household. Excuse me. Yes, decades of Venezuelan government forgot about the poor. Yes, one was more corrupt than the other. Yes, Chavez is helping the poor, quote, a little bit, end quote, probably more than governments past. But, Ed writes, just like Bush, Chavez is a populist, and a new class has emerged from the Chavez regime. They are more corrupt than all other governments combined, and oil prices are soaring, so imagine how much wealth they are amassing. Chavez has succeeded in purging Venezuela of the so-called white class by instigating social hatred, intolerance, and domestic terrorism, and strict economic policies aimed at dismantling established industries who are not with the revolution. In many ways, the ways of Bush regime is very similar to Chavez's. Virtually all manufacturing in Venezuela has gone elsewhere other than oil, iron, and other minerals, and it is all state-owned. All I am saying, Ed writes, is that Chavez is a monster, too. I would just like for you to keep that in the back of your head when you make references to Chavez. That's all. A fan, Ed in Miami. I only know what I can observe from the vantage point of in the States and watching the American press react to what goes on in Venezuela, and also fully understanding that there have been two attempts to overthrow Chavez to get at his oil, both attempts engineered by the U.S. CIA. So. As far as Ed's take on this, I have to disagree, but he lives there, so perhaps he knows more about it than I do. But anyway, thanks for writing, Ed. Ed, is that his name? Yeah, Eduardo. Tomorrow is the Kentucky and Oregon primaries, and as Hillary Clinton is saying today, it doesn't matter. It's just beginning. The primary season is just beginning. What? Did you see the pictures from the rally in Oregon, in Portland? 75,000 people show up for a political rally with Barack Obama? Go to HuffingtonPost.com if you haven't seen these pictures. Dear God, 75,000 people show up for a Barack Obama rally. Someone needs to, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with the Clinton campaign. You guys have lost. Honest to God, it's over. It's been over. It's going to continue to be over. But what did she say today, you know, with that smile that's beginning to look just painted. I feel sorry for this candidate, Senator Clinton. I can only guess this is what happens when you become obsessively fixated on something that you think is going to occur, and it's not, Senator Clinton. Honest to God, it's not. You are not going to be the Democratic nominee for president. It's just not going to happen. The wackiest endorsement of the superdelegates occurred today. Senator Robert Byrd from West Virginia. Now, his support comes, you know, after Barack Obama's 41-point loss in that state to Hillary Clinton. 41-point loss, and Robert Byrd comes out and says, "Well, I endorse Senator Obama." Well, what's interesting about this guy, if you don't know, you younger people, I'm talking about the ones around 45 or 50, you younger people, if you don't know, Robert Byrd is a former member of the Klan. He's apologized for this 1,000 times, but he said he joined in the 1940s to fight communism. Oh, give me a break. You joined to fight integration. Ah! He also opposed integrating the military. That was in the 50s that Harry Truman ordered. He opposed that. And in the mid-60s, he filibustered against the 1964 Civil Rights Act. So, Senator Byrd, please sit down, shut up. You're the longest serving. You're in the record books. Nobody will ever surpass your record as the longest serving senator in the history of this republic. But honest to God, on the other hand, I can imagine it would be difficult to think back almost 70 years to the time when you joined the Klan. It's hard for me to remember what happened last month, Senator, but the record is there. You were a Klansman. You were opposed to the military being integrated, much less having gays in it. Oh, my God! Negroes? Oh, and you filibustered the Civil Rights Act. So please don't pretend like none of that happened. Anyway, he said he had no intention of getting involved when his state was in the midst of a primary. But now that it's over, he says in a written statement, "The stakes this November could not be higher." Senator Byrd went on to say that Obama has the qualities to end the Iraq War, which, of course, Byrd is strongly opposed. His statement said, quote, "I believe that Barack Obama is a shining young statesman who possesses the personal temperament and courage necessary to extricate our country from this costly misadventure in Iraq and to lead our nation at this challenging time in history," end quote. And you know the thing about Byrd? I've met him. He talks that way when he's ordering in a restaurant. He talks that way when he's having somebody assist him to the bathroom. That's the way this man talks. Very flower. What's he call Kathy? The Senate's answer to Cicero, I believe, right? But I just found it kind of just ironic as hell. I mean, you live long enough and everything becomes irony. You're aware of that, of course. I know. But everything becomes just pure, dripping irony. Here is a guy who's endorsing a black man for president who spent 3 decades, if not longer, trying to stop black folk from even having the right to enter our wars and go die for us. Or corporate America. But you know the myths. So, again, if you can keep your tenuous grip on this planet long enough, everything becomes irony.
to be as, you know, to be in solidarity as best as I can with them. And I think, you know, playing golf during a war just sends the wrong signal.
Oh, well, that's real sporting of you there, pal. Why don't you suggest to your daughters and the one's new husband, why don't they sign up and go to Iraq and bring freedom and democracy to the Iraqi people? Huh? Regarding Hillary's refusal to wake up and smell the coffee, Diana wrote in, "Hello, Mike. The propaganda meisters have been very successful in not painting the Hillary Clinton candidacy as Bill Clinton's run for a third term in office. But let's get real. That is what it is. Hillary could not and would not be running for president if she weren't the wife of a former president. She wouldn't even have become a senator if she hadn't been the wife of the next president. As a liberated professional woman and feminist, I do not want the first woman president of the United States to have gotten there because her husband paved the way. So all you feminists out there, please stop and think what you are really doing by reinforcing the stereotype that women can't make it to the top except on the coattails of a powerful man. When Bill ran for his two terms of office," Diana writes, "he told us we would get two for the price of one. Well, without a doubt, we will be getting a twofer again if Hillary wins office. I do not understand why this point hasn't been hammered at by Clinton's opposition in the primary. You can bet the Republicans will hammer at it should she be the candidate in November. Yes, the Clintons have been tested, and all that garbage will be dragged up, retread and rerun if she's on the ticket in November. The election won't be about the issues or about Obama. It will be about the Clintons, and even as a Democrat, I'm sick of hearing about the Clintons and their baggage of dirty linen. Nor have I heard voiced the main reason I think an Obama-Clinton ticket would be a bad idea. Superficially, it would seem to be the ideal ticket for getting Hillary supporters to vote in November. But what happens after the inauguration? How can Obama be an effective president with a powerful ex-president looming at his side? I simply don't see Bill fading quietly into the background to let his wife function merely as a deferential vice president. The struggle for power in Obama's administration would become a ball and chain for him and a disaster for a country in need of effective leadership in new directions. Hillary needs to demonstrate that her love for her country exceeds her own and her husband's personal ambition and do what is best for the party, and that is to bow out and do everything in her power to make certain her supporters back the Democratic ticket in November. What she does now will tell us more than anything she could ever say about who she really is." Diana. Yeah, I think so. I think so. This is a real sad story. A woman named Ruth Davis. She is from she's from Scotland. She's a native of Scotland, but she's a mother of two who has been living in Miami for a long time. She's expecting her first grandchild this year. She works as a consultant to a diet company. Owns her own home. Has a bunch of pets. Mrs. Davis says she's not a drug user. She has never been a smoker and doesn't even care much for alcohol. What happened to her? Well, she is 65 years old, and she was on a business trip. She was trying to deliver 33 pounds of high premium pot, which was locked up in the trunk of her rented Chevy Impala. She was busted in Johnston County, North Carolina, on I-95 on her way to New York. North Carolina trooper got in her way that morning, and it was a couple of months ago. And by chance, the troopers stumbled across a new type of drug mule, older people. Ms. Davis said in an interview from the Johnston County Jail just last week, she's still in jail, she said, "I'm not someone you'd think would be doing this." Now, interestingly, over the past couple of years, the number of people over 60 charged with trafficking drugs in North Carolina state courts nearly doubled. In 2007, at least 44 elderly people were arrested for trafficking everything from marijuana to cocaine. Why was Davis doing it? She said, "I have a good life. Really, I do, but I was in a rough patch. 7 years ago, doctors discovered Davis had a blood disease. It was a long, painful ordeal, one she braved without health insurance. The bills mounted, and they're still coming in. She owes more than 20 grand. Then her daughter got into a bad car crash and needed plastic surgery to reconstruct her face. More thousands. So when a friend asked Miss Davis if she wanted to make some quick cash, she said yes. She got busted on her sixth run, the last one that she needed to finally have enough to pay her medical debts. It sounded so easy, Mrs. Davis said. Now, her arrest has brought her more trouble than she could have imagined. When she finishes a six-month sentence in the Johnston County, North Carolina jail, she will face a deportation hearing. No health insurance. Mounting debts. And then this. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
The Supreme Court was so upset they sent him off to jail. Maybe we should help the fiend and take away his spine. But we're busy reading Playboy and the Sunday New York Times. And I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody outside of a small circle of friends. Smoking marijuana is more fun than drinking beer. But a friend of ours was captured and they gave him 30 years. Maybe we should raise our voices, ask somebody why. But demonstrations are a drag, besides we're much too high. And I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody.
I could have passed a background check on the standards applied on the most stringent conditions when my dad was president of the United States, a 15-year period.
Well, that's groovy there, Chuckle Nuts. Last week, according to the Times, there was a letter written by Albert Einstein to the philosopher Erich Gutkind in 1954, that the letter was sold for $400,000 at auction. A letter. The letter describes, in Einstein's words, he describes the Bible as, quote, pretty childish, end quote. He scoffed at the notion that the Jews could be, quote, a chosen people, end quote. A historian for Caltech said she was not surprised that this letter, which was known to Einstein scholars, brought such a high price. In an email message to the New York Times, she wrote, quote, it is an important expression of Einstein's thoughts and views on religion, on Judaism, on his views about God and religious texts. She said the letter, which was not written for publication, was concise and unvarnished and more straightforward than the metaphors he usually turned to in public. Now, are you familiar with this? Do you know what he said? Einstein, as he says in his autobiographical notes, he lost his religion at the age of 12, and he decided that it was all a lie. And he never looked back, but he never lost his religious feeling about the apparent order of the universe or his intuitive connection with its mysteries. He once said famously, the most incomprehensible thing about the universe is its comprehensibility. I hate closed-ended statements like that, don't you? Huh? Anyway, he consistently characterized the idea of a personal God who answers prayers as naive, and life after death as wishful thinking. But his continual references to God as a metaphor for physical law went on in his famous rebuke to quantum mechanics when he said, quote, God doesn't play dice, end quote. And in lines like the endlessly repeated one from Einstein, quote, science without religion is lame, religion without science is blind, end quote, as you know, has led a lot of people to say, well, you know, Einstein, the greatest thinker in the history of the human race, was a believer. Well, apparently he was not. Now, he tried to distinguish between what people might refer to as a personal God and a more cosmic force. Einstein described himself as an agnostic and, quote, not an atheist, end quote. He associated atheism with the same intolerance as religious fanatics. He said, quote, they, referring to atheists, are creatures who, in their grudge against the traditional opium of the people, cannot bear the music of the spheres, end quote. Now I tend to agree with you, or disagree with you there, Dr. Einstein. Can I do that? Can I disagree with Einstein, Kathy? Huh?
I don't think he'd care.
You don't... according to the Associated Press, in the letter, he wrote, quote, "The word God is for me nothing more than the expression and product of human weaknesses. The Bible, a collection of honorable but still primitive legends, which are nevertheless pretty childish," end quote. As for his fellow Jews, he said that Judaism, like all religions, was, quote, "an incarnation of the most childish superstitions," end quote. Now, he claimed a deep affinity with the Jewish people, but he said, quote, "as far as my experience goes, they are also no better than other human groups, although they are protected from the worst cancers by a lack of power. Otherwise, I cannot see anything chosen about them," end quote. When did Einstein die? In the 60s? I know he died after the establishment of the State of Israel. I wonder if he was aware that the Jewish people, as he refers to them, developed cancer because they accumulated power, political power, that they have been using since 1948. Anyway, I just found that kind of interesting, even though he references people like me as not able to hear, or we can't bear the music of the spheres. I think the music of the spheres is wonderful, Dr. Einstein. It just has nothing to do with... Oh, never mind. Never mind. I'm sure you've heard this story. Our military correspondent, Sharon, sent this in. She puts a little personal note. I think this is a failure of leadership. The story is about the soldier who uses the Quran for target practice and got caught. He forced the chief U.S. commander in Baghdad to issue a formal apology on Saturday. Major General Jeffrey Hammond, commander of U.S. forces in Baghdad, apologized to leaders in that city for the staff sergeant, who was a sniper section leader assigned to the headquarters of the 64th Armored Regiment. He also read a letter of apology by the shooter. Now, you got to wonder how this guy got caught. Well, an Iraqi tribal leader said, quote, "the criminal act by U.S. forces," end quote, took place at a shooting range at the police station on the western outskirts of Baghdad. After the shooters left, an Iraqi policeman found a target marked in the middle of the bullet-riddled Quran. Copies of the pictures of the Quran obtained by CNN show multiple bullet holes and an expletive scrawled on one of its pages. Oh, that's really groovy. You get some smart-ass, I don't know how old this guy is, the soldier. His mental age must be about 17. You get some smart-ass punk and give him the position of sniper section leader. And he is given the command to commit specific, individualized killing. Not, you know, no mortars, no RPGs, no bombs, nothing randomized. Specific, individual, targeted killing. And he does this, which I think is a clear indication that this sergeant was not ready for the specific, targeted, individualized killing to which he was assigned. And we've been there for 5 years. There's no excuse, is there, for a single soldier not knowing the basics of counterinsurgency. For example, you don't shoot Qurans full of holes at an Iraqi police station, do you? It's this sort of thing, isn't it? This sort of thing that just is beyond belief. Well, I got bored, with target practice. I want some more live people to shoot. So I shot up the Quran and then wrote, oh, God. Bush is back. Remember, he was in the Middle East for 5 days. He made his famous speech at the in the Israeli Knesset, equating Democrats and, most notably, the unnamed Barack Obama as being a Nazi appeaser. This from a guy whose grandfather financed the death camps, but who's keeping track of that, right? He told his Arab allies on his last day. He was in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, which is a resort area, I believe. He was there addressing the World Economic Forum on the Middle East. There were 1,500 policymakers gathered there. I would imagine many, 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 many of them, probably the vast majority, were from the Middle East. And he's standing there lecturing these Arab or Muslim or both representatives that expanding democratic reforms and isolating the two countries that won't do that, whom apparently George Bush thinks are Iran and Syria, that expanding democratic reforms and isolating Iran and Syria were crucial steps to a secure and prosperous future for the region. Jesus, God. He didn't mention Saudi Arabia, that is a Wahhabist royal family authoritarian dictatorship. He didn't mention Kuwait, which is just about as bad. He didn't mention Jordan, which is a kingdom where there are no civil rights. He didn't mention the United Arab Emirates, which is another Western equivalent of a kingdom. He didn't mention Dubai, which is another equivalent of a kingdom. And he damn sure did not mention Egypt, which is a personification of a military-style authoritarian dictatorship, one of the countries that we use to rendition people to have them tortured. And every time Hosni Mubarak allows an election, the first thing he does is jail his opposition. Now, these are the people Bush is talking to, but he selects Syria and Iran. Either George Bush is, in fact, the dumbest ass ever, ever, ever to be in the position of President of the United States, or none of this stuff matters to him. It just doesn't matter to him at all. Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Jordan, United Arab Emirates, Dubai, Egypt, it just goes on and on. These are either kingdoms, dictatorships, hell holes, authoritarian sump of the sewer holes. But no, let's talk about Iran and Syria.
Long as I got my plastic Jesus riding on the dashboard on my car. Through my trials and tribulations and my travels through the nations, with my plastic Jesus I'll go far. Riding down the thoroughfare.
You know,
restore chaos and order. But we will.
You've done a fine job, Chuckle Nuts. All right, I was kind of waiting to see what sort of response we get to Ed's letter, Eduardo's letter, the guy who said that Chavez is really a terrorist and a bad guy for his country and yada, 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 but a populist like Bush. Well, here's the answer. This comes from Bina. She writes, Bush is a populist. Bush hasn't a populist bone in his body. He is capitalist to the core. He hasn't given the people anything they want, unless the people in question are the owners of big, big businesses who've contributed millions to his campaign war chest. Does that sound populistic to you? Ed is also wrong about Chavez. He's not a populist. He's a socialist. You know, the economic form of a small-d Democrat. Redistribution of wealth, etc. That's what Chavez is. And he's especially wrong about the alleged hatred of whites Chavez is supposedly fomenting in Venezuela. One look at Chavez's government should tell you that. His ministers come in all colors, and some happen to be not only white, but middle class or higher. So are a growing number of his supporters. This line, he's a hate monger, is a lie. Plus, no industries have been turned out except those who'd only exploit Venezuelan resources without paying their taxes or due regard to the environment. Previous administrations looked the other way, quote, to encourage foreign investment, end quote. To me, that sort of behavior, Bina writes, is like taping a kick me sign on one's own back. Kudos to Chavez for ripping that sign off his country's back. I've learned Spanish, Bina writes, so I can understand what Chavez is really saying in all his speeches, and I have not heard one word of hate coming from him. He's not only an impressive speaker, he's also totally anti-imperialist, which is obviously not the same thing as a plain old hater. Hate does not win love, and Chavez is very much loved. He's made it clear that he is with the people, and that's why he's popular, not populist. Don't believe the hype coming from Miami. Bina. Thank you, Bina. What else we have here? Oh, yeah, back to Bush coming home. This chiding little speech that he gave to the Arabs only days after praising Israel for 60 years of justice, peace, and freedom. What does that accomplish? I mean, here's a guy who has launched two wars against two Muslim states and is contemplating a third one. He goes to every time he goes to the Middle East, he sucks around whoever happens to be the prime minister of Israel as though he's, I don't know, looking for a pat on the head. And then after he sucks around the prime minister of Israel, he sucks around the royal family of Saudi Arabia. And usually they do toss him a cookie or give him a little chunk of meat and say, good dog. This time they didn't. But other than sucking around the Israeli government or sucking around the Saudi royal family, what does Bush do in the Middle East that is constructive? Nothing. Everything he does is destructive. But anyway, he said, quote, too often in the Middle East, politics has consisted of one leader in power and the opposition in jail, end quote. Now, he said this in Egypt, for Christ's sake. He said this in Egypt. The Egyptian press, utterly and absolutely controlled by Hosni Mubarak, one of the newspapers, Ahram Weekly, based in Cairo, there's a columnist for that paper named Gamal Nkrumah. After listening to the speech, he took aim at the Bush administration's habit, it says here, of supporting Middle Eastern democratic elections only when the right people win. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. The columnist said, quote, the United States has masqueraded as the champion of democracy and upholder of human rights at a time When many question its real motives, Washington has been discredited by its double standards. But isn't that true? While Bush talks about the horror of it all in places like Egypt, where he made the speech, and while he doesn't talk about the horror that goes on in the torture rooms in Jordan, these are two of the countries, or he does mention Syria, but these are three countries to which George W. Bush orders his killers in this country to send people to be tortured. While he decries their lack of openness and democracy, this miserable son of a bitch does everything in his power to keep them that way. The speech is for consumption at home. The people in the Middle East know him. The Israelis know him and use him. The Saudis know him and use him. The Jordanians know him and use him. The Egyptians know him and use him. The Kuwaitis know him and use him. The Iranians know him and use him. This is our leader. Seven past the hour. I like this. Our friends in the Great White North, specifically in Vancouver, British Columbia, a lawyer there has written to the immigration minister for Canada. And this attorney is urging the minister, Diane Finley, not to allow Colin Powell to enter Canada. He is scheduled to speak in Vancouver on June 12th about leadership in the 21st century. Why? But anyway, one Gail Davidson, she is the co-founder of Lawyers Against the War, wrote in her letter to the Canadian immigration minister that Powell is, quote, a person credibly accused of involvement in war crimes, crimes against humanity, and grave human rights abuses, including torture, end quote, all of which, of course, makes him inadmissible to Canada. Ms. Davidson went on to say, quote, Colin Powell, as a member of the Bush administration, is accused of complicity in the most serious crimes known to the global community, including indiscriminate targeting and willful killing of civilians, targeting and destruction of infrastructures necessary to life, illegal capture, illegal detention and treatment of civilians, torture, subjecting prisoners to murder, cruel and inhumane treatment, illegal detention and transfer, end quote. Son of a bitch, this is a former U.S. Secretary of State. This is what the Bush crime family has done. And if Colin Powell is involved, and he is, imagine the involvement of these bloody sons of bitches, Cheney and Bush, which, of course, leads me to the next scream, and I'm not going to scream it. Nancy Pelosi still insists that impeachment is off the table. Complicity in the most serious crimes known to the global community. Indiscriminate targeting and willful killing of civilians. Targeting and destruction of infrastructures necessary to life, illegal capture, detention, and treatment of civilians, torture, subjecting prisoners to murder, cruel and inhumane treatment, illegal detention and transfer. Ms. Davidson's letter cited Section 35 of the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act in Canada, which states that a foreign national is inadmissible if this person has committed an act outside Canada that is referred to in Sections 4 through 7 of the Crimes Against Humanity and War Crimes Act of the Canadian government's definitions of those. That section states that a person is inadmissible if he or she was a senior official in the service of a government that has engaged in terrorism, systematic or gross human rights violations, or genocide, or a crime against humanity. This is where we are. Now, the Canadians obviously are borrowing from the language set forth in the Nuremberg trials. Everybody knows this. The rest of the world knows this. And some of us in this country know it. But the vast majority in here in the United States do not understand that Bush and his gang are guilty. I'll just render the verdict now. Guilty of crimes against humanity. And if you don't agree with a guilty verdict prior to the presentation of any evidence, fine. Bring these sons of bitches before a tribunal. Let us hear the evidence. Let's hear it. And don't give me that bit about, oh, well, Mike, you haven't heard the evidence. How many people, this is a terrible example, but how many people, even though he was acquitted, believe that O.J. Simpson was innocent? See, there you go. George W. Bush and every single one of his senior officials guilty of crimes against humanity. And they just flit around. George goes to the Middle East and lectures people on democracy, small d, lecture and talks about the Democrats, big D, back here in the United States are Nazis, Nazi sympathizers. And what does our media do? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. About 3 years ago, 4 years ago, this attorney, co-founder of Lawyers Against the War in Canada, launched a private prosecution laying 7 torture-related criminal charges against George W. Bush while he was on a state visit to Canada. The charges against Bush were later declared a nullity by provincial court judge William Kitchen. And in 2006, the British Columbian Court of Appeal upheld Judge Kitchen's ruling that it was a nullity. I don't know what that means in Canadian law, and to our listeners in Canada, you don't have to write and tell me. I'm sure it just means, no, that's null and void because, and I don't want to know the reason. I don't want to know the reason that the government of Canada, or certain aspects, at least the judiciary of Canada, I should say, decided that the charges against this murderous son of a bitch were in fact a nullity. It's going to happen. I do believe. I don't. It's not going to happen in this country because President Obama or President Hillary Clinton, either of them, is not going to bring charges or appoint a special prosecutor, go to the Congress and say, let's investigate what happened in this country for the past 8 years. How many crimes were committed? Who's guilty? See, that's not going to happen. Because the political system in this country is totally degenerated to the point where our leaders can commit war crimes and nobody will goddamn do a thing about it. Not the courts, not the Congress, not the media, nobody. Our leaders commit war crimes with impunity. Our leaders commit war crimes with impunity. The leaders of the United States commit war crimes. by the definition set forth in Nuremberg after World War II. Astonishing. And nothing happens. Nothing. There is a... You want an Orwellian nightmare? There is a bill in front of Congress right now introduced. One of the sponsors, there are 32 members of the House who are pushing this bill, and one of them is a Democrat from Kansas, Dennis Moore. I'm sure there are more than just one Democrat. But this plan, this is how far the immigration thing has taken us to the brink of madness. Here's the idea. The federal government would have to sign off on every hiring decision made in the United States. Every. You go to work at McDonald's. You go to work as a biochemist. You go to work as a nuclear engineer. You go to work as a garbage collector for the county. It makes no difference. These psychopathic bastards want to pass a bill that says every single hire, no exceptions, school teacher, dog catcher, executioner, makes no difference. Every single hire in the United States would have to be investigated, passed on by a brand new branch of the federal government. Oh, it's the old branch. It's the Social Security Administration. That's who they want this to do this. More on this when we come back, and then we're going to take your phone calls. The number here is 800-989-1480. Do stay with us.
Hey, Jose,
yeah, what? Yeah.
Listen to this, it's coming. You know what it is?
What?
It's a drum solo.
Okay, everyone, like, this is me on the drums,
oh,
eh?
Get out. It is not.
It
You're
is
lying.
So.
Stop
I
lying,
learned.
Will you?
Take off, eh?
Oh,
Mike Malone.
21 past the hour. So, 32 members of the House are trying to push a bill that will create a system where the nation's 7.5 million employers would be required to provide the government with Social Security numbers for all new employees, which is more than 55 million each year, and federal employees would then use a massive new database to do cross-checks. The system would aim to detect any workers who got their jobs by using fraudulent Social Security numbers. Now, for people who have become all goddamn paranoid out of their minds, how did this all of a sudden become an issue? What happened? Why in the last year or two? Is it Lou Dobbs' fault? What? Is it because the Mexican immigrants coming across the border in the southwestern United States stopped to take a dump along the way and forget to flush? What is it? All of a sudden, Mexicans! The ACLU, surprise, surprise, opposes the plan and says this legislation would create a no-work list in the D.C. bureaucracy. You know, we have a no-fly list now that now has what? What did I read, Kathy? 70,000 or is it 700,000 names on it? 99% of which, I'm sure, don't belong there. ACLU Washington Legislative Office Director said, quote, Americans should not have to ask their federal government if they have permission to accept a new job. Really? Now, the real thing here, the real scam here, the subtext, the ulterior motive is to overwhelm Social Security. You know, that dirty, rotten FDR originated back in the Depression thingy that the right-wingers led by George Bush have tried for years to get their filthy, corrupt hands on. Trillions of dollars available for Wall Street. Oh, my God, let me have it. But you see, dumping this into Social Security will sink it, absolutely sink the entire bureaucracy. This at a time when disability cases are piling up, needy people are waiting years to receive their benefits. That's according to the CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. She was testifying, this woman was testifying before the Senate House, the House Ways and Means Committee on Social Security recently. She said that this plan will divert the agency's workers from their current jobs, and she noted the cost, $10 billion over 9 years, or roughly 10% of the Social Security Administration's budget. What is wrong with these wigged out members of Congress, Democrats and Republicans? Oh, my goodness. Oh, there are people in this country working who don't belong here. What are they doing? Picking things. Oh, do you want the job? No, that's not the idea. They breed. Oh, okay. Do you breed? That's different. I'm an American. I'm white. Or black. So now they want to do this. Federal government has to pass on every single job that requires withheld wages, I guess. I mean, doesn't it happen already? Kind of, sort of. I mean, aren't employers supposed to take Social Security numbers? They certainly have every job I've ever had. And they go somewhere. They don't go to the local Target. I think they go to the government. But these paranoid bastards, what has happened where it concerns immigrants coming illegal? Okay, if you are more comfortable with that word, then use it. I don't care. I live in Georgia. We have one of the highest numbers of illegal immigrants in America. And you know what? I don't feel threatened. I really don't. And I don't know any carpenters, house painters, or lettuce pickers who are not illegal immigrants who do feel threatened. Another non-issue. Can't let the gays get married. Oh, God. That was an issue. Now this one. So, the federal government would have to pass on. Oh, God. I mean, they're already telling people they can't vote unless they can prove their citizenship. Now you can't get a job unless you can prove your citizenship. What the hell is going on? What's going to happen when they say, well, no, you can't go to the bathroom unless you can prove your citizenship, at least not a public bathroom. We don't want any of these dirty, filthy third worlders using our public bathrooms. So we're going to station somebody in front of every public toilet. And when you show up, bring your passport or photo ID. No, photo ID won't work. Social Security, I don't know, bring something. But you can't use the facilities unless you're a citizen. Do you understand?
from the left. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Yes, it is. It's about 25 before the hour. Illegal immigrants or illegal employers, Bob writes. The crafty paranoids and power always placing the blame on the worker. Yeah, not the employer. You know, that's the guy that breaks the law by using illegal labor and doesn't get prosecuted under the Bush regime. Now, Bob writes, they can consolidate more power and sink Social Security at the same time. Oh, these sneaky little devils. Oh, my God. All right, let's do some phone calls, starting with Chris in Cave Creek, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, Chris.
Hi, Mike. I've always figured for illegal immigration, you just prosecute the corporation that's hiring the illegals. But you know, that's just too common sense for these people.
There are laws already on the books, right? Why not just enforce the law? The whole idea makes me a little bit dizzy and ill to think that people come here. I know they don't have the proper papers simply because we and our economic policies have destroyed their means of livelihood. So they come here for jobs and then we're going to arrest them. That makes sense.
It's a repeat of what happened to the Irish Catholics and when they came over to work on the railroad, and to the Chinese, mm-hmm. and to the Italians, and it's just history repeating itself. Listen, this guy that shot the Quran, I'm sure you've heard about the guy, a couple of guys now that are suing the Army, suing the Secretary of Defense as well personally, because of the rampant strain of fundamentalist Christianity that's going through the Army right now, and the fact that these guys are being pressured to convert, and that if they don't attend Sunday services, they're sent to do the most onerous duties in the Army, latrine duty or whatever, while the other guys are at church.
Well, I knew this was going on at the Air Force Academy, but are you saying this is going on in war zones?
In Iraq. Ah. Yeah. These guys are, I forgot the guy's name now, Jeremy something, I think he's a captain or something in the Army, I want to say.
Okay.
Or whatever, but he's suing him now, and he's suing Robert Gates as well, saying that he tried to organize a group of atheists and agnostics and people, basically non-Christians, in the Army who could, meet and just hang out together off-duty. Mm. And the major, his immediate superior officer, says, well, if you do that, I'm going to not only make your life a living hell, but I'm going to make sure that you don't get promoted and blah, blah, blah. And apparently this kind of crap has been going on. It's not just that they want you to be Christian, Mike. They want you to be a fundy Christian. They want you to be a rampant one.
Or as a
crusader.
I was going to say, as Bin Laden says, a crusader. Yeah, oh, my God. Do you know where John Sidney McCain III stands on this particular issue?
Oh, well.
I don't think he's much of a Christian, is he?
Give him 5 seconds, Dylan, and he'll tell you two different things.
My friends? Yeah.
My friends? That's right. It's a Street Talk Express, Mike.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate you checking in, man. Thanks a lot. Take care. Todd is calling from Coconut Grove, Florida, listening on WINZ. Hey, Todd.
Yes, sir. How are you, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
All right. Thank you. Yeah, I heard those remarks about Chavez, and about a year ago, I hired a young Venezuelan for a caretaker here at the property, and you could tell he had a very sophisticated education.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to his incessant rants about Chavez, mm-hmm. but without ever disclosing my progressive persuasion.
Mm-hmm.
But finally, when he reported how his father, who had been a diplomat, had two Porsches, and I simply asked, why did he need two? That kind of ended the relationship.
You never got an answer, huh?
Yeah, right. But as far as I'm concerned, Mike, the Venezuelans in Miami are a mirror reflection of the obnoxious Miami Republican Cubans.
Really?
They're right down the same parallel.
Yeah.
So I'll leave it at that and wish you well.
All right. Thanks, Todd. I appreciate you checking in. Phone number here is 800-989-1480. Two open lines. Take advantage of that. Bob is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Mr. Malloy. This is my second time to call you. I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I just want to go over two things and boil it down real quickly. First, the word appeasement. If you don't mind me mentioning Chris Matthews, mm-hmm. I was watching a show with my wife, and he had a right-wing talk show host on there. And Chris Matthews said,
"Yeah, we played almost that whole video or audio on that on this program. Wasn't that the damnedest thing you ever saw?"
Yeah, he was so stupid. And when he told him that Chamberlain had given away half of Czechoslovakia,
mm-hmm.
well, my wife looked up the word appeasement, and it means pacify.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way Chamberlain pacified him.
Right.
Now, we were reading the internet yesterday. It's a real long article about Prescott Bush. And what he did in the 40s
right.
was he owned a bank in the United States, and I'm going to not put all the facts down. And he was very friendly with a man named Thyssen, T-H-Y-S-S-E-N.
Bob, you know, we've talked about this extensively here in the last
week.
No, that's okay. It's okay. I need to let you know, I would let any caller know, these things that you may bring up, we just hammered.
Apologize.
No,
I
no problem.
I just thought it was terrible that the pot is calling the kettle black.
There you
him
go.
Him referring to the Democrats being
his father
was sucking hind tit to the German military, building up the German armament. And you know he was supposed to go to jail. Did you know that?
I do. I do know that. That he was he was charged with trading with the enemy act. Prescott Bush, or threatened with being charged. And Prescott Bush wound up being a senator, and his son winds up being president, or his grandson winds up. It's crazy! Oh my God! David is calling from Pittsburgh, listening via the internet. Hey, David.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right.
Well, you know, after listening to other people talk, my thing's probably stale. But before you let the callers on, you give like talks, you know, on these different things. And I was just hoping that the audience, maybe some of them, would record these and just write them down word for word and use them as editorials in their local papers. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't even.
David, what happened to David? David, are you there? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. I was cut off. I don't know. Am I still going here?
Yeah. So, anyhow,
I thought that would help. And because I think what you say is concise and honest, and we wouldn't have to even bother to, and you can do it so much better than we can anyhow, so, and we agree with it, so. Maybe we could do that and throw a lot of papers throughout the country.
No, that wouldn't work, David, because the only reason I come up with whatever you hear on this program is by doing a lot of independent, you know, on my own reading. I would never want anyone to listen to a single thing you hear on this program and take it as gospel or truth or.
Well, I'm just saying it would help.
Well,
I'm saying
but
do it so very good. I'm all the way from Pittsburgh and I'm listening to you. If you weren't that good, I wouldn't be doing this.
Well, no, I certainly understand what you're saying, David, and I appreciate it. It sounds like a compliment to me, and I do appreciate it. Appreciate the way you're saying it, and thanks, David. But whatever you hear on this program that comes from me, I don't know how much of it is original. What would you say, Kathy? 5%? Most of it is a distillation of so much that's out there and available to everybody. And I like the fact that people listen to this program and attribute to me conciseness or making a point clearly and so on and so forth. You know, that's nice to hear. But I just hope that you understand that behind all that is the work of not just the people who work on this program. No. I'm talking about every news source I can get my hands on during the day, you know, that I have time for, and it's a distillation of all that stuff. which I'd have to admit comes from the training years ago, 25 years ago, working at CNN. That's how we were trained. You know, it's a huge funnel. You take all of this stuff that you can get your hands on, if you're going to report a certain story, and run it through the funnel so you wind up with 30 seconds. That's the way it used to work in television news, the 30-second reader or a minute and a half, a bit of airtime. And that system stuck with me. But that's all it is. I appreciate your thoughts on it, though. I really do. I wish I could take credit for everything. Say, yeah, well, this is me, because I'm so damn smart. I'm not smart at all. I'm just a good reader, I guess. Probably not even that. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
You know, sometimes I'm so carefree with a joyless heart. And sometimes again it seems all I have is words that you finally see my other side.
Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. You know, we mentioned Lieberman at the beginning of the program. He has become John McCain's shade almost. It's just it's unbelievable, this guy. And a lot of people say, well, you know, you Democrats picked him for vice president. No, he didn't. The Gore-Lieberman ticket, Gore didn't pick him either. That was a decision made by the Democratic Leadership Council, and you saw how far that went. But Lieberman now has attached himself like some kind of a lamprey or a homunculus to McCain. And that's irritating enough. But this one got past me. Lieberman had asked Google, the parent company of the online video sharing site YouTube, to, quote, immediately remove content produced by Islamist terrorist organizations, end quote, from YouTube and prevent similar content from reappearing. There's a letter online where Lieberman demands that Google/YouTube start censoring what the videos that are sent. Now, YouTube already censors to some degree. They don't run videos. What does this say here? YouTube, in a response this afternoon, said taking those actions, the ones Lieberman wants, was not so simple. It refused to remove all videos mentioning or featuring these groups without consideration of whether the videos were legal, nonviolent, or non-hate speech videos. But what Lieberman said is to get rid of them. He wrote the letter to Eric Schmidt, the chairman of the board, CEO at Google, in which he said that YouTube, quote, permits Islamist terrorist groups to maintain an active, pervasive, and amplified voice despite military setbacks or successful operations by the law enforcement and intelligence communities, end quote. What the hell does that mean? YouTube responded immediately and more or less told him to go pound sand up one of his body orifices. No, they're not going to do it. YouTube's statement is, or Google's statement, quote, while we respect and understand Senator Lieberman's views, YouTube encourages free speech and defends everyone's right to express unpopular points of view. We believe that YouTube is a richer and more relevant platform for users precisely because it hosts a diverse range of views. And rather than stifle debate, we allow our users to view all acceptable content and make up their own minds, end quote. Now, YouTube has community guidelines that, that prohibits hate speech and asks users not to post videos that show someone getting hurt or attacked or humiliated. And users flag the videos they feel are inappropriate, and then the company will take a look. And if it, it falls outside the company's guidelines, they'll toss them off. They'll get rid of them. They'll delete them. Lieberman just irritates the hell out of me. I mean, does he you or not? You okay with Lieberman? Oh, God. Back to your phone calls. Darius is calling from Houston, Texas, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Darius.
Hey, what's going on, sir?
Hey, you are.
Oh, man, I just wanted to try to get this thing, this word out here. I got an email a couple of days ago from, I think, a guy from Syracuse, Dr. Watkins or something like that, and he was trying to rally the troops up to try to get Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly off of Fox News, trying to really throw a boycott their way. And I want to try to see if we could take the opportunity with all the progressives and all the liberals that be on the station might listen to you, that might agree with that notion. If we could spread the word and try to, get people to check it out.
All right. You want my opinion on this one, Darius?
Yes, sir.
See, I don't think that's a good idea. I really don't.
Okay.
I think individual people can decide whether or not they want to have their brains polluted by these thugs. Unless there is some sort of a human right or a civil right being violated openly and egregiously, in a case like that, I'll participate in strikes, boycotts, demonstrations. But when you have some little piglet like Sean Hannity, Sean Hannity's no threat to anybody. Anybody, and neither is Limbaugh. Anybody who believes that garbage, anybody who sucks along on that stuff, is already in hell. Already is saying, look, I don't have a mind. I can't think for myself. I'm useless. I'm going to sit back and vote for stupid stuff. In the meantime, I'm going to keep voting against my own interests. The only way to get rid of a piglet like Hannity and a monster like Limbaugh is to ignore them. Now, that's easy for me to say because I don't ignore them on this program. I'm always busting their asses or bringing up something stupid that they've done. But I mean, as far as trying to organize a boycott, now, in the recent instance where Limbaugh was advocating violence in Denver at the Democratic National Convention in August, see, I think the FCC should have taken the son of a bitch off the air. Boycott. I mean, when somebody gets on the air and starts talking about, well, I hope to see cars burning in the streets. I hope it'll be like Chicago 68. That punk, that fool, that instigator of violence needs to be taken off the air.
They probably put the pressure on me. Probably just blame it on the drugs or something, you know.
Yeah, probably so. Probably so.
All right, but I'm not going to tie up your lines, buddy. Thank you very much.
All right, Darius. Thank you, man. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. I don't misunderstand anybody. I believe in exercising our economic power. We never do. I mean, you can't do that in this country. Not that you can't, but people don't. People don't. Why? Because there's too many of us, 300 million of us, 300 million people. I don't know. But the best way to handle the Sean Hannity program or the Rush Limbaugh program or any of these people is just to ignore it. That's the way it ends. What folks seem to not understand, when you start notifying radio stations with negative letters or networks with negative comments about somebody who's on the air, you're proving to them that people listen. And they love it. Best way to do it? Ignore the bastards. Let them sink under a tidal wave of their own. Oh, I can't say that. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Back to your phone calls here in just a second. got to share this with you. This comes from Iranian news agency. Dateline is Tehran yesterday. The title says, Iranian women on top of inventors list in Korea competitions. Iran's female inventors have received 23 medals at the Korean International Women's Invention Exposition, coming at the top of the list, bagging 12 gold, 5 silver, 6 bronze medals. Iranian women inventors gained first place among 25 countries participating at the international event held in the South Korean capital of Seoul from May 8th to the 10th this year. Mariam Islami's Implement for Reparation and Surgery of Osseous Diseases grabbed the International Federation of Inventors Association Award. Ms. Islami was also honored with the special emblem as the top laureate for her findings consistent with the treatment of bone and joint diseases. Mehrnaz Golchinfar has invented an electricity generator system for third world countries. Her power station, free of environmental pollution, was selected as the best invention and won the special jury award. Sonia Sabere's nano composite earned her the World Intellectual Property Organization Award. Organized by the Korean Women's Inventors, Korean Women Inventors Association, the first international event for women inventors from around the world, Iranian female inventors competed with participants from 25 countries, including France, Switzerland, Japan, Romania, and Australia. Despite Western media's propaganda against Iranian women as oppressed creatures, there is no barrier for women to research and study. Iran's university students consist mainly of women, and most scientific research is conducted by women. Now, let's kill them! Let's bomb them! Yeah, that's the ticket! Good God. Regarding the dumping onto Social Security, the obligation of passing or declining on every single man, woman, or teenager who gets a job in this country to make sure that we are citizens. Oh, God. Regarding that story, Bridget writes, Mike, this makes perfect sense. The way you control the population is by making them all criminals. Isn't that a point of most of our laws? Go 1 mile over the speed limit, you're a criminal. Smoke pot, you're a criminal. Fudge on your taxes, you're a criminal. Have blank blank in many states, you're a criminal. If you have any desire to protest or, God forbid, run for public office, you are always conscious that there is a crime in your background. Of course, that only really affects Democrats. Republicans are, by definition, sociopaths, so they are not bothered by their own crimes. Note the number of pedophiles. The sad thing about all this is that most of us don't care. The only crimes most of us are interested in are things like murder, theft, violations of international law. Can you say Bush administration? But the way to keep us down, those of us who actually give a damn about little niceties like the Constitution, honor, integrity, is to make it illegal to do things we might naturally do, like want to work and support our families, even if we don't have the right paperwork. Mike, there's so much of this country that is so blanked, but in all honesty, I don't think any government in history has ever done anything different. Sometimes I wonder if there's any hope. Bridget. Thanks, Bridget. Bridget's implying that there's no such thing as good government. I think government can be extremely beneficial to its citizens. I would agree that instances of that sort of government in human history are decidedly rare. And usually, okay, maybe they're non-existent. Maybe Bridge is right. Let me stick with the rare for a second, though. They're decidedly rare, but what usually happens, doesn't it, is that into these spheres of government come the scum. You know, the scum, rather than the cream, rises to the top where it concerns government, I guess. But that's also true of business, isn't it? If you take a look at the highest levels of business, with the exception of some of the tech industries that refuse to go along with the madness. But if you take a look at so much a corporate structure, when you get up to the boardroom, you find scum, filth. Quickly comes to mind Air America. There's an example. Those of us who were trying to make that network work were, to the degree that we were, righteous. But the people who ran it were scum, filth. You can find that in just about any corporation. Now, oddly, at Nova M, that's not the case. Of course, we're just a little tiny baby company. Who knows? Maybe at some point we will. No, it'll never happen here. But anyway, government, I digress. Why did I get on the America thing? I guess because I just hate them. Government. Even the ones that start out in a righteous frame, Bridge is right. They go to hell, don't they? Well, all right. I'll back off rare and just go with Bridget's comment. Always. Always bad. Always scum-sucking. Terrible. But they don't have to be that way, do they? Government. Governments. Oh, hell, maybe they do. I don't know. This thing about the Iranian women, though. Just no! No! Iranian women don't invent things. No. They live in harems. They don't? Back to your phone calls. Bruce is calling from California, listening via the internet. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, good evening, Mike.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I was going to make a comment on your comments about Social Security and about the new thing. I recently opened a bank account, and either I gave or the clerk mistyped one of the digits, and immediately it came back and said, that's not the right number. And I, gave him the correct number, and we moved on.
Right.
But the point is that they have the technology right now in every bank because of this Homeland Security crap to automate this and to simply do it at the click of a computer. Now, whether it'll be done that way is something else again, and whether they're going to take some other role in the hiring process, I don't know. But as far as the technology, it exists right now inside banks.
And I think it exists especially inside any institution that has to do with cash flow, whether it's a mortgage company or a bank or a credit union or a credit reporting agency or what have you. Yeah, you're absolutely right. But I think what these freaks want to do, the Democrats and the Republicans who apparently put this thing together, they want specifically for Social Security to have to pass or decline on every single job applicant or person who gets hired. So the technology is there, yes, and it could be adapted or modified or what have you. But the whole idea of saying to Social Security, all right, here's another job for you. Of the 55 million people who are hired for a job every year, we want you to check every single one of them and make sure they're citizens. And that's what they're talking about, too, Bruce. They're not just talking about whether or not they have a Social Security number.
I'm not sure if you misunderstood me. I was saying that I applied for a bank account, not for a job.
Yeah, no. I understand.
Making sure you understood that.
Yeah, I got that.
I'd like to say that, I speak Spanish fluently.
Hold on a second. Let me put you on hold, Bruce, because I got to do a break here. We'll be right back.
Broken rules.
Europeans, Friends Future. It's Mike Malloy.
I love Piance, Fiance, Priance. All right, back to Bruce in, was it Bruce? No, I'm sorry, Arnold. It was, no.
It was Bruce.
Okay,
yeah.
Bruce.
Yeah, I imagine it's pretty confusing to keep it all straight on your end. Anyway, the point I was going to make was that I speak Spanish fluently. It's going on 40 years since I minored in college.
Mm-hmm.
In it, I married an American lady from a Mexican family. I've got grandkids with Hispanic fathers. You know, I'm very, very close to the Hispanic community. I had my own business and had 75% of my clients were Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, I'm close to the people and close to the language and close to the culture. I bring that up because I still feel that and believe that people should be legally here. I mean, not legally here, but legally eligible to work. Okay, I mean, they should be, they should, if they can't be eligible to work, they shouldn't be working.
Well, I agree with that in principle, and I agree with that on a fundamental level. But I think what, with all due respect, Bruce, I think you're kind of taking that one little slice of a much bigger picture. So many people who come to this country and simply... I agree with you, do not get the proper work papers, probably because they understand that their sheer numbers would overwhelm the system.
Right.
These are people that are coming here because economic policies that were developed in the United States have destroyed their ability to get work in their own country.
I agree with you completely.
Right.
On.
So you know, for us to be hard asses at this point, and not us, but the government, and say, okay, we've destroyed your economy. I'm not necessarily saying that that was the goal of George Herbert Walker Bush and Bill Clinton when they worked this NAFTA horror on the Western Hemisphere, but it is, at the very best, it's an unintended consequence, and it could have been and still can be corrected, but it will not be because corporate America now has a death hold on government. So it doesn't matter to corporations what is happening to small businesses or independent farmers in Mexico. They can die. They can go straight to hell. They are collateral damage, if that.
Right.
So as a result of that, these people come flooding north to get work because they have families, they have children, they have people to take care of, they have old people.
Sure. Believe me, I understand that.
So
I guess the flip side is that every country has a fundamental right to control its own borders.
Well, absolutely, but every country does not have a fundamental right to ignore those borders and institute economic policy that destroys less developed countries immediately to the south.
Get
my drift. So that's why I say, while I can fundamentally agree or essentially agree with you about the right to control one's borders, there are circumstances that almost make that right kind of laughable, especially when we destroy someone else's economy and then say, well, we destroyed your economy for our benefit, the benefit of our corporations, but you just have to suck it up. See, that's the thing. There is a much bigger picture here, I think, right?
Well, good argument on your point, on your part.
All right, well, thanks for checking in,
Bruce.
All
right, thanks, Mike.
All right,
bye.
Take care. This is a problem I have with that same question. That same question. Because I think that as long as we have nations and boundaries and nation states and so on and so forth, there has got to be an orderly flow of people coming and going. I don't have a problem with that. It's like I say, when one country, the dominant country, in a binary pair, if you want to go to that crazy length and say that the U.S. and Mexico, we're kind of a binary pair, and we shatter, just shred their economy, do we not have an obligation to respond in a manner other than just saying, we will put your ass in jail if you come over here and go to work without going through this hoop and that hoop and this hoop and that hoop and so on and so forth? So it's a tough question. I understand what Bruce is saying. It's a tough question. All right. We're just about coming up to a break here. That's why I'm hesitating. I don't want to take a call. We got about 10 seconds. So we will get back to the calls as soon as I'm still looking at this Iranian women on top of the inventors list in Korea competitions. My goodness. And haven't we been told, of course, that all Iranian women are just utterly and absolutely oppressed and we need to go in there and help them fly kites? We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
To Oregon to harvest your hearts. Dig the beets from your ground. Pick the grapes from your vines. To set on your table your light sparkling. It's green pastures aplenty from dry desert ground. From the Grand Coulee Dam where the waters run down. Every state in this union us migrants has been. And we'll work in this fight and we'll fight.
Mike Malloy Show, you are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It is 25 before the hour. I don't think there's any flying monkey free zones left. All right, here you go. Excuse me. Bush has a short one. Madonna doesn't have one. Jefferson had a long one, and a priest doesn't use his. What is it? A surname! But what I really called for, Captain Mary writes, AP Radio News says that Ms. Clinton is expected to win Oregon despite the fact that Obama enthralled some 75,000 people there today. Do we smell fraud in the wind? And what a shame that the Clinton campaign tried million-dollar bribes. What's the matter? Aren't Choice Point and Diebold up to their old fraud standards anymore? Tisk, tisk. Sweet, refrigerated deity in a lightly brandied cream sauce. Give me strength. Some folks just ain't never satisfied. Captain Mary keeping it lit in Memphis. It, in this case, is a neon sign saying, Marble Bar and Palace Truck Stop, we mix them. Whatever it is, don't bogart it. Captain Mary cracks me up. Thank you, Captain Mary. Michael writes, greetings, Mike. There was a documentary done on the overthrow or the attempted overthrow of Chavez called The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, done by an Irish film crew that was in Venezuela to film a documentary. It was purely by coincidence they were there in the country at the same time as the Bush overthrow attempt. Just Google the film title, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, and add the word documentary. It is the second site listed, and you can view the entire 75 minutes online. Utterly fascinating as to the complete and utter lies by Bush and Cheney. My favorite part is Chavez literally handing out copies of their constitution to the poor people. Can you imagine Bush handing out copies of our constitution? Regards, Michael. No, I can't. Not in my wildest imagination. Drug-induced states or totally drunk on my ass. No, I could not imagine that. Back to your phone calls. Mike is calling from Tallahassee, listening on Sirius. Hey, Mike.
Mike, good evening.
Hey.
About a year and a half ago, I went blind, and you'd be surprised how fast you change the way you judge race and skin color. I can't see a thing, and my eyes have never been so wide open.
I hear that.
But that's not the point I wanted to make. I believe that Obama needs to step forward and make the speech to the American people that we need to hear, similar to Kennedy's speech. We will be on the moon within a decade, but we will be off foreign oil within a decade. And the way we're going to do this is bring together the scientists and engineers of NASA, MIT, Stanford, the engineers of General Motors, Ford, Dodge, the steel workers, the manufacturers, and we need a World War II type effort, Rosie the Riveter, 24 hours a day factories. We need 50 million electric cars, and we're going to need computer engineers, managers, laborers, line workers, food workers, custodians. It's all so quickly doable. Mm-hmm. And for the vehicles that can't use electric immediately, we need to get away from corn, leave our food supply alone. We need cellulose-based fuels, quick-growing weeds such as hemp that are high in oils, combustible oils. It's just so doable. Take some of this money that we're putting into this war and make it happen. You'd be surprised how fast people will look past skin color when they can see green in their wallet.
I hear that, Mike, loud and clear. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you checking in. I'll tell you what else we could use besides hemp, if you want to use the cellulose-based fuel supply, especially here in the South. Kudzu! Which, didn't that originally come from China? Wasn't that a Chinese import? Yeah. Well, wouldn't that be ironic? Arnold is calling from California, listening on Sirius. Hey, Arnold.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
I ain't talked to you in a long time, man.
No, you haven't.
Not since my great state of North Carolina came punching in there and did that thing, you know?
I know.
I think the race is going on real good. Barack Obama stands at a good position now. I mean, 60,000 people showing up in Oregon. Those kind of crowds, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some things you spoke on tonight, Mike. You know, that's one of the reasons I like to listen to your show. Because you, like, just like you were talking about that one subject about Social Security being strong armed by these congressional, talking about.
Right, right.
Let them pick up the bill of, with $10 million. Mm-hmm. And you put the cloak of the devil. You took the cloak off the devil and show what really is behind all that is they trying to break it down again, attack it
sure,
again.
Sure, sure, absolutely. That's the whole idea behind all this nonsense is to bust into the bank that is Social Security, get right. Their filthy hands on it, and hand it off to the brokerage houses and investment houses on Wall Street. That's all they want.
That's all they want. Social Security. China, Japan, Saudi Arabia are still holding those worthless T-bills that the United States promised to pay back. Mm-hmm. It's just a crying shame. Another thing you said tonight, Mike, that got my attention. You know, Uncle Joe Lieberman. Oh, man. It's like watching National Geographic. You know, the sucker fish that goes around alongside the shark, you know.
Sure.
Or the little bird that hangs around the back end of a rhinoceros sticking off the sticks and stuff, you know.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
That's what he reminds me of, man. I tell you, he's just like a... It's so slimy, I can't stand the guy.
He's got something in mind. I don't know if he and McCain have talked, but if they have talked, I'm sure Lieberman has said, make me your Secretary of State. Make me your Secretary of State. You know what I'm saying?
Us Afro-Americans got Clarence Thomas. The Jewish people got Uncle Joe Lieberman. I tell you, man.
Thanks,
Arnold. Nice talking to you, Mike. I'll see you, everybody.
All right. Take care. And we atheists have, who do we have? Yeah. We have Dawkins. I mean, he's pretty good. We got Christopher Hitchens when he's sober. Paula is calling from Bayonne, New Jersey, listening
to
the internet.
Hey, Mike, we atheists don't have anybody.
We don't?
No. We have Pete Stark, but he's a good guy, isn't he?
I guess.
Nobody has the balls to say they're atheists.
That's true.
Damn it, we've been voting for people who don't represent us for years.
That we have, haven't we?
Well, anyway, I called about Lieberman, too, because you say his name, and that just starts, you know. That just gets me going, and I'm hyped up on wine and NyQuil, and, you know.
Uh-huh.
I have to go off on Joe Lieberman.
Wine and NyQuil?
Yeah, I have a cold.
Oh. Well, wine and NyQuil, that'll make you delusional, won't it?
That's what I'm hoping. I mean, this is the tail end of the bush years, Mike. I'll take anything I can get.
I hear you.
I'm, you know, like this far away from, you know, just like sniffing like gas from the oven. You know what I mean?
Oh no, don't say that.
No. Just in small doses, not enough to do the job. Just enough
you.
To make me delusional.
I hear you.
I mean, you know, everything's fine. But anyway, that droopy dog looking son of a bitch needs to shut up and go home.
Who, Lieberman?
Yeah.
Isn't he? I don't know. Does he ever find anything happy?
He's just, you know what it is? He's just whiny and annoying. Yeah. And I think he really wants to be in with the cool kids. I think he's harboring some kind of, you know, thing from when he was in high school, when he was picked on and got wedgies and, locked in the shoved in lockers and things like that. And he's trying to overcompensate for that. That's why he hugs Bush. That's why he's in love with John McCain now.
Well, you talk about an odd couple, though. McCain and Lieberman, you know, in the first place, you know, it must be very difficult for Lieberman to downsize his brain, because Lieberman is a very intelligent man, to downsize his brain to have a conversation with McCain. What the hell does McCain talk about? What can he talk about? What can John Sidney McCain III talk about?
I don't think, the thing is, it's not McCain talking to Joe Lieberman about anything. It's Joe Lieberman telling John McCain how wonderful he is. And what a strong, handsome man he is, even though he's got that thing on his cheek and he looks like half a chipmunk. What the hell is up with that?
I don't know.
You know, say this, Mike? Yeah. It bothers me to no end.
I know. He's putting away nuts for winter, I guess. I don't know.
We pay, the American taxpayers pay a lot of money so our representatives in Congress can have the best health care money can buy.
That's right.
And he has the audacity to walk around with that thing on his face.
I know.
Can he get it lanced or something?
I don't know, Paula. You would think, wouldn't you?
You know, it just that drives me up a wall. I mean,
I know a great dermatologist here in Atlanta. If McCain ever comes here, I'm just going to say, go see this guy, please. You know. All right, Paul, I got to go. Hey, be careful with the NyQuil and the
water. No, I'll be fine, Mike. Don't worry about it.
All right, thanks for checking in. Thanks for take care. I love her. But she always makes me nervous when she calls in. I'm just waiting for her to say, and I'll tell you something else. These and just. Paula from Bayonne. We're coming up on a break, right? There's no point in even attempting to take another call right now. All right, you can start the music. You can go ahead. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. About 10 before the hour. Thanks to the gang, Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Sharon Gordy, and Catherine Bay for assisting in the production of this program this evening. Are you a Nova M founding member yet? With all the free stuff that goes with that. You haven't? Oh, come on. It's $100 a year. And by the way, if you haven't been to NovaMradio.com yet, go please go there. There's all sorts of Malloy swag available. Is Randy swag available yet? They're coming with Randy stuff, too. Yeah, okay. And check out MikeMalloy.com. Thanks to Billy Foster, our web designer. It looks pretty cool. Back to your phone calls. Dave is calling from Indiana, listening on WCPT. That's in Chicago, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, you're listening on the internet.
Yeah, because they go off the air early in the evening.
That's right. Hi, Dave.
How are you doing? This is the first time I called you since you were on Air America. I didn't know you were still on the air.
Well, I'm not with Air America anymore. They fired me.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, well, I called you that thing about the Social Security. That was a result of a hearing for Congress quite a while ago, I think, you know, early this year or late last year, about people's identity being stolen by immigrants. What people do, they steal people's Social Security numbers, and they put their name on it, and they've had people come before Congress who were looking for jobs, and they couldn't get jobs, and one gal couldn't get a job, and they said, oh, that's because there's a warrant out for your arrest.
Ah.
And another person called that their credit rating was ruined. They had people find out their babies had bad credit records because they're stealing babies in the hospital. As soon as they're born, they get credit card or Social Security numbers. They steal those, figuring out, hey, nobody's going to notice that maybe for 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason that was put into place to stop that.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but I just wonder, A, how many times it happened, and B, this seems to be a law enforcement issue, not an issue where you try, not you, but where these members of Congress try to destroy Social Security on the back of, oh, well, we've got to stop the theft of these Social Security numbers. If Social Security numbers are being stolen and used fraudulently, that, it seems to me, that's, first of all, it would be a federal crime. I would imagine that either the Treasury Department agents or the FBI should get involved. And instead of going after the hapless street guy who takes buys one of these cards, maybe go after the people who produce them, the ones who are savvy enough to steal, to go online, or however they do it, to steal identification and then sell it to people. God only knows why a worker coming across the border who doesn't speak English but is told, look, you need this card. It only costs you $1,500. Oh, okay, here's the money or whatever. So, again, let's not confuse cause with effect. I'm all in favor of law enforcement if the laws make sense. For example, our drug laws are insane, most of them. But if there is a problem with people dealing in identification theft, then go after the people who do that, not the people who use the damn card. Doesn't that make sense, Dave? I think it does. I think it makes sense. Dave, where's Dave? There's Dave. I'm sorry.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, yeah. One thing I too want to mention, what was kind of funny after that, what they ended up doing, some of them are stealing, evidently stealing the cards, and paying into Social Security. So they've already committed a crime by stealing someone's identity.
Right.
You know what the Democrats did? They tried to pass a law, and I don't know if they did or not, that saying, okay, these guys committed a crime, but that's okay. We're going to let them go. And once they get a new Social Security number or whatever, they get to get those benefits they paid into illegally on someone else's card.
Well, I don't know. I thought that was dumb.
If they've immediately done it, those benefits should go to the person whose card they've stolen.
Well, that's true. That's true. It certainly should. But you're getting too deep for me now, Dave. I'm listening to what you're saying, and I don't know if what you're saying. No offense, but I don't know if what you're saying to me is something that came off a right wing website, or if this is a major law enforcement problem in the United States. I understand identity theft, but it's my understanding that from what I've read in the paper, and I only know what I read in the paper, that so much of identity theft is engineered from various African states like Nigeria or Eastern European former Soviet republics. That's where most identity theft originates. You know, people who use the internet in a very sophisticated way, and do this. Now, if folks want to stop this, once again, if you want to stop that kind of theft and crime, if you wait until it hits street level, where somebody coming to this country needs a card to go to work, it's hopeless. You can bust, you can bust a million people for using a fraudulent a Social Security card, which does nothing to stop the traffic in fraudulent Social Security cards. I hope that's coming through. I would think that the people who wind up with these cards are as much a victim of this scam as the Federal Treasury or whoever is being scammed, the people whose numbers are being taken. Or something. I don't know. It's too late to get that involved in that deep a subject. But I hear what everybody's saying about this issue. But let's try to understand that the crimes, it's against the law for an employer to hire somebody without proper documentation. How many times do you hear of employers going to jail or fined or what have you? It's always the worker who's being paid $4 an hour who takes it in the chin, right? Thanks for hanging out tonight. I appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night. Okay, take care. Do take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.